Since 2010, Music Nomad Equipment Care has been making premium and innovative guitar care products used and trusted every day by top guitar repair shops, guitar makers, and touring techs in over 50 countries. Pro quality but affordable Music Nomad is also the go-to for countless guitar players around the globe to help their guitars look, sound, and play their best. Whether changing strings, setting up your guitar, or detailing every inch of your gear, Music Nomad products are designed and engineered to be the best in class. From top to bottom, each product is so well thought out that it's clear their passion for guitar care is unmatched. With over 100 industry-leading products, it's hard to talk about them all, but some of the favorites are their 100% natural fretboard oil that cleans and conditions your fingerboard like no other, their Guitar Tech tool sets that can adjust just about anything on a guitar, string changing tools that make changing strings a breeze and actually fun, and they demystified the guitar setup process by developing their new innovative Keep It Simple setup, aka KISS for guitar setups. Their KISS precision gauge tool set comes with easy to follow instructions and many how-to videos anyone can follow to set up their guitar to play and sound great. And last but not least, their recent introduction of a game-changing fret care tool line, which takes fret care to the next level. Make sure you check out what all the buzz is about around Music Nomad, as they truly are redefining and raising the bar in equipment care. Learn more at musicnomadcare.com or follow them on social media with @musicnomadcare.
Hey Joe, quick question. Why couldn't the bicycle stand up by itself?
I don't know why.
It was too tired.
Hello and welcome, dear listener. Welcome to another episode of the Guitar Nerd Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by JD Short.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, JD. Hello, everyone. Right. Well, dear listeners, this week, obviously, it's JD and I, and so we're inevitably going to speak about a bunch of bass stuff, as well as the standard news and topics and things like that, just because we've both bought a load of stuff over the last couple of weeks. So, you know, we've got some fun, exciting things to get through. Also, dear listeners, thank you so much for all your help on my Telecaster hunt. Last week on the podcast, I was talking about it with Matt, the fact that I really want to just get rid of a bunch of guitars and just get my ultimate, like, 52 Tele, just a butterscotch deep neck Telecaster. And then I spoke about that even more when last week I was on Philip Carter's 40 Watt podcast, and I've been inundated with messages and links by people to various suggestions, some in the UK, some in Canada, some in the US, some in Europe. All offering to help me ship them over. So thank you all for your suggestions. I'm still not 100% settled on where I'm going to go. It's that tough thing of, you know, you're almost getting exactly what I want in just the Vintera. You know, even like they do a Sunburst one. It's almost there. Okay, there's no Nitro. But then part of me is like, but then am I just getting another £800 guitar? Should I just bite the bullet? Should I spend a load of money? Should I get a custom shop, American Vintage? It's still up in the air. I'm sure over the next few weeks I'll get there, but I'm not there yet.
So. Yeah, I'll just say, like, I always love the gear craving journey where you, because like the amount of times I've started with, it's like, oh, I just want something like this, and be like, I don't want to spend a load of cash on it, so, you know, a few hundred quid, whatever. And then after a while, you're like, you know, I could go a bit more. And then it's best when you keep going and it gets extremely high and you're like, this is silly. And then something comes up that's just perfect. And you're kind of like, oh, yeah, you know, that, you know, 300-pound Tele that I've never seen of, like, parts casters, you were saying, like, on the last episode, I think. You know, like, those.
Yeah.
Like, when something comes up, you're like, yeah, this is it. You know, and, yeah, I love the weird. I'm sort of into, like, weird compromises on gear at the moment, you know? And so it's sort of like the niche I feel like I'm in, where it's like, I want something that's not quite right, because then it makes me do other stuff.
Sure, that's actually not a bad thought. I'm normally the same. I normally end up being like, right, okay, I can't look around forever. I can't find everything, something that ticks every single box. Maybe I'll just get something that's not quite the right finish. Maybe it's not the right year or neck profile or not the right brand. But I don't know. This time, I'm trying to be good. But you're absolutely right. It has just got ridiculous. You know, I started off being like, maybe I could get a Classic Vibe Squire and mod it. And then I was like, oh, I should get a parts caster. I should buy a body and a neck and I should do that. And then I was like, maybe a Vintera, then maybe an American Vintage. Then I go on Philip Carter's podcast and that man must spend every time I podcast with him, he's bought two new, like $3,000 plus Gibsons. And, you know, of course, he was like, what you need is a custom shop. And I started looking around at custom shops and I've had to step back and be like, you don't want a Butterscotch Telecaster $3,000 much.
Yeah.
You know, when the American Vintage is available for less than two and all you're really getting is some additional wear.
Yeah. When you start getting custom shop prices, you could find an actual 50s telly for that, for some of those prices, you know, like it may not be in the best nick, but like, that's not something like for me, that's not something that would like put me off.
Sure.
You know, find it, like for me, when I was looking at 78 jazz basses or something like that recently, I was sort of thinking, it's like, yeah, I don't mind if it's modded in the way that I was going to mod it anyway. Like I'm for me personally, as like a using it instrument.
Yeah.
It wouldn't, like, I'm not precious about like period correct. I'd like to keep all the parts, you know, and be able to go back if I wanted to. But you know, if someone had a 78 with different pickups in it, great. You know,
Yeah, around that time period, it's okay. I mean, you know, partially. Because most, if we're talking about Fender, most people who bought Fenders in the 70s added battery packs and active pickups and refinished them and whatnot because they didn't have the prestige that they do now. But yes, I'd like to do it as well. And it's the same, isn't it? Half the reason I was looking when I wanted to get like a 51 style precision bass, half the reason I was looking at Wynyard basses as a custom build, because we checked them out, didn't we, at the Brighton Guitar Show? Oh, yeah. We checked them out in Birmingham as well, didn't we? Yeah.
I'm surprised that neither one of us has a Tele and a P bass from there.
I know. I really want one. One of the things that's so good about them is he makes Relic 51 P bass. It does amazing Telecasters as well, dear listener. We have spoken about them before on the podcast, but if you haven't checked them out, do check out Wynyard Guitars. But when he's making a 51 P bass, now bridges on a 51 P bass are very bad because you just got the two saddles. I guess the same as like a vintage Tele has three dealing with six strings. This has two dealing with four. The problem is it really does not work on a bass. Yeah. It makes it very difficult to intonate and, you know, they're not good. And so what Wynyard guitars do is use a modern bridge, but it's hid very cleverly and carefully underneath the you know, the traditional ashtray, but it's kind of a customized shape to fit like a big high mass bridge, which is a great idea because you're getting all the looks of the vintage bass with pretty much no concessions, but you are getting that one little thing, the bridge fix.
Yeah, because I remember we were talking about it and it's like it really makes it usable as opposed to, you know, it just being like a slab for the first four frets, you know, and it's the thing where I think on a Tele you can get by with it. Whereas on the bass, when there's 10 inch scale length difference, you know, like that little amount of intonation really changes, you know, from when stuff's out, it's quite out if you can't get it situated. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's one of the reasons I love the new American Vintage 54 Telecaster bass is brilliant. They've gone for wooden saddles, just two of them on that. And I'm like, I love everything about this. I went to tried it out when I was up at the Fender place in London. The neck was incredible, absolutely huge. The single coil pickup sounded amazing. Played it through a Fender Super Bassman and an 810 on like the drive channel. And it was just absolutely wonderful. Comes with flats. The problem is I know I'll probably never play it outside of my bedroom because I know that that bridge is not fit for purpose. For a wooden bridge dealing with two saddles is not going to deal with the rigors of loud prog.
Yeah, well, loud prog playing hard and playing a lot of shows. You know, like I feel like, it's the same sort of thing with me. It would be lovely, but, you know, chucking it in a van and, you know, like bashing it about is even if it were fine, it would worry me. Like it's a thing, it just doesn't instill confidence in me. And changing tact a bit. Like I was thinking about, this the other day, like one of the Facebook questions, we were talking about wireless systems.
Oh yeah. And I was thinking about the X5 wireless.
Yeah. Yeah. I quite like mine. American quite, where it means a lot as opposed to diminishing quite.
I see.
but I was thinking about the old, like my first wireless was like a Nady, was like a little box that sat on top of your head and had a little like actual like metal antenna, like you would get on your television or something. And I always remember like some of the first gigs, I was like, this is cool, but the power was, you know, a wall wart adapter with a tiny little thin power lead to it. And it always, that little lead always weirded me out because I would chuck it back in to my, in the like SKB case my heads were in, just, you know, was in there as well. And it was always fine. It probably still works to this day. It's at my parents' house, but just the thin little power line. I was like, this is my entire signal is gone if this one cable goes. And so I was always thinking about it as, you know, so I would imagine I would be the same with the bridge where I was like, this could go at any moment. And if it does, there's no real recovery.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny, those little things on otherwise, you know, fantastic pieces of equipment that do their job really well, they'll just have this one little thing that makes it awkward or scary to use them in a gigging thing. Like both me and Tim, my guitarist, we both use the MXR ISO bricks. I think it's the ISO brick and not the DC, but I think it's the ISO brick. We both use the ISO brick, which has its power cable is the same as yours. One of those tiny little thin power cables that goes off to a plug. I've been meaning for both of us to change onto CHOX. I have a few CHOX power supplies sitting around here that I use for stuff. I could just change it, but it means, you know, unwiring everything on the board. But every time we're setting up our pedal boards at the front of stage, I'm like, both of our pedal boards are powered at the front where we're jumping around all over the place and sound techs are getting on and off by a power cable so thin, if you stepped on it whilst it was on the edge of the stage and you got a sharp stage, you're probably going to permanently and, you know, with no option for a fix during this gig, destroy your entire pedal setup. It's weird that they'd go for a cable like that, but...
Yeah, I think it's weird too. Like, it always... That's the one thing why I sort of made the decision. Well, in this new suite of effects are all our power supplies are all, I have the CHOX as well.
Yeah.
That I really like. And my board now is running two CHOX supplies, both with the IEC kettle lead, you know, coming out. And what I ended up doing, this is just a hot tip. We'll talk about it on the accessories bit, but I bought a IEC Y cable. So I have the two female ends that go into the power supply. So I still only run one lead out. So I only take like one plug socket. But so like under my board, and this is, you know, surely I could do more with a custom board or whatever. But this was a 5-pound fix, you know, just getting an IEC Y cable, and it just So hot tip: IEC Y cables.
There you go. Very usable. But yes, we are actually on the Patreon of this episode, dear listener. JD and me are going to continue our talk about accessories and things like that. So I'll try not to sort of use up all the content ahead of them, because we both love accessories and so do you. So we'll discuss that then. I wanted to talk about this Esquire that I checked out last week before we move on away from telecasts and things like that. I'd seen it on Reverb and I noticed it was in... this lovely little guitar shop in Worthing, which is the nearest town to where I've moved since I've moved out of Brighton. It's called We Have Sound. And it's just a little, it's in an arcade, just in a little sort of side street arcade. Has a few bits. One of those shops that will have like plenty of stuff there for beginners and things like that. And then loads of like weird, random older things, you know, like they'll have a WEM amp combo and, you know, and I don't know. And
they currently have a Kramer Focus 8000 four string, which is their wild Explorer shape with P and Music Man style pickup.
There you go. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. That's the thing. There's always something weird and interesting there. But they had still have this guitar listed there as an unbranded parts Esquire in Fiesta Red. So I went to check this out, and it's a parts caster made. The neck is a V profile, which I was very excited about. Sadly, it was a very thin V. So I was like, oh, I changed the neck, but I changed the neck anyway, because it's like an unfinished sort of modern look and I'd want a vintage tint on it. Maple neck. It's from Northwest Guitars, the neck, which is a good brand for that sort of thing. Yeah. High quality parts. Body, I don't know anything about. It's a nitro finish that's been lightly reliced. It's not quite Fiesta Red. It's almost Capri Orange when you actually see it, which was a bit too much for me visually. Yeah. It was a little too bright, but the finish was well done. But what really attracted me to it was the fact that it was an Esquire loaded up with a Seymour Duncan Quarter Pounder, a pickup that I've always liked. And then it had this really interesting five-way toggle switch, pickup selector. How possibly can you get five options? It was a fantastic five options. So position one, which I think it starts on the bridge side, is no volume and no tone. So it bypasses all your controls, goes straight to the output jack. So it gives you a nice volume boost. Everything is very brash, very loud. You're getting the absolute most out of that Seymour Duncan Quarter Pounder. And because it's a Quarter Pounder in this position, if you're running into a valve amp, I played it into a Tiny Terror combo, which actually sounded, an Orange Tiny Terror combo, sounded fantastic. I haven't played one of those in years. And I was like, oh yeah, this amp is wonderful. It drove it. It gave me a drive tone on a clean setup, or, you know, sort of slightly less than edge of breakup setup. Going to the bypass gave me a drive sound. So I had that on a toggle switch, which I loved. It was the ultimate guitar for not having pedals at your feet, because as you'll understand as I go through the rest of these, this super switch. The second option gave you volume but no tone. Fine. This was just a normal sound, no tone, I guess. Maybe slightly brighter. I struggled to hear sort of a real difference. I'm getting that confused. It was volume with no tone, as in with the tone off completely. So you had a lovely muffled sound, which was a bit like having a neck pickup tone, which was very usable. I liked that. Then the third setting gave you standard volume tone, everything as you'd accept. So as you'd expect, so you could mess around with that however you want to shape some sort of halfway sound if you like. In position four, you got the volume with the Eldred mod cap, which gave you this gorgeous, rich, it was like a muffled, the tone was cut slightly, but almost mid-humped. It was a gorgeous sound, very, very usable. And then the fifth option, which I loved the most, was volume with an Ario cocked wah. So it gave me a really piercing mid hump in the lower mids area, and gave me that absolute sort of, yeah, cocked wah, a wah pedal held in a fixed position, sort of quacked, not quite the quack, but you know, that sort of tone. And it was brilliant. I couldn't believe you had five such unique sounds across this super switch, and they were all fantastic and gave me so much versatility out of this guitar. The whole thing with the hard case is $299. It's still there, dear listener. I just know I'd change the neck and refinish it, and at that point, I'm paying a bunch more. I could just find someone who does the super switch.
Yeah, I mean, if the super switch was, it's one of those things where at that price point, you could really think about just getting it for the bridge, the pickup, and the super switch, and you know, go into a different thing is, like, the body's all right, but I know what you mean. I was looking at some of the photos, and it looks red in a lot of them, and then there's a couple where it feels very orange. And
yeah,
yeah, and I was like, the orange is less.
Yeah, if it had been Fiesta Red, actual Fiesta Red, I think I'd have been like, okay, I'll get this. Because to be honest, when I was looking at making a parts caster, I was looking at custom bodies for 350 quid.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
this is less than those. And I was like, I can make do with the Fiesta Red, but there's just so much I'd have to do. I'd take off the neck because it wasn't my cup of tea, and I'd refinish the body. So that's a new neck. I'd probably go for a Fender neck. That's 300 quid. And a refinish, what's that, 250 at least?
Yeah.
So it's another, yeah. So all in all, I'd probably spend around a grand on it, you know, to make it what I want. And I was like, I could just start with the thing I want at that point. Like, there's no advantage, especially to getting it and swapping stuff out.
Well, I mean, I'd get it just for the crossed tele-style headstock pin that's been epoxied on or whatever with the Union Jack.
Oh, it's awful, dear listener. Yeah. It's the logo on the headstock. Yeah, it's two tellies crossed over each other with a Union Jack. It's like a pin badge. It's terrible.
I mean, I like the idea. It's a good idea to have. I like the idea of a pin badge. Let me be more specific. You know, right. where you're like, oh, it's cooler than putting on, you know, if you don't want to leave it blank and you didn't want something else. But yeah, I said that also, colors wise, it just doesn't go with the rest of the guitar anyway. No. And the Union Jack isn't, unless the photos are really bad, the Union Jack isn't blue and red. It's like a lighter royal blue and maroon.
Yeah. It's a weird one.
Anyway. that's the thing I think's weird about it.
But it was it nonetheless, it was very cool. I love the idea of the Super Switch. If I wasn't on this path to like slim down my guitar collection at the moment, I'd totally have got it anyway, just because it was $299. But I really just want to have a few good things. I want to stop buying mediocre guitars. That's my aim. Isotope Native Instruments and Plugin Alliance are launching a whole bunch of super hot deals for the Summer of Sound sale. From now until the 6th of July 2023, Isotope are offering all their software for 50% or more off, including the comprehensive mixing and mastering bundle Music Production Suite 5, as well as flagship tools like Ozone, RX, Neutron, and more. All things I use to edit this podcast. Visit isotope.com and check out the frankly colossal range of things that you can get at extraordinary prices, and take your mixing and editing to a whole new level. That's my aim.
Also, just before we move on, it looks like those control plates, you can get them pretty readily available for about 85 quid.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. That'd be cool. I could get a Squire. Oh, no, stop it, Joe. No.
Yeah, no, I was like, I really like this idea. Like, I like the idea because I'm really interested in the mods, and I broadly love drop-in kits or things that completely change the function of a Telecaster, you know. And it's like, this does completely different things than you would normally expect it to do. So yeah, I'm 85 pounds. There's loads on eBay. They may have a separate shop, but it's the Roadhouse where you can get it. Yeah. Interesting.
Very, very, very cool. That shop, actually, dear listener, do check it out. wehavesoundguitars.com. Just a little shop in Worthing, but obviously they ship stuff as well. One of the things they do is they have this deal with a local luthier pedal enthusiast called Mike Rivers, and he makes things for them, including the Jaffa caster with a double bite away, which is a Jaffa cake body shape and paint finish guitar. Four string tenor, I guess. I don't really know. Is it a lap steel? I can't really tell what this is. They do that for $149. And he also cuts pedals into like cigarette boxes and things like that, as well as doing a few sort of normal octave fuzz and things. But he's got like some old, old tobacco tin, tin of fuzz and tin of rock. So, and they're all like 60 quid, you know, 70 quid for cool, interesting, unique looking effects pedals. So they are worth checking out.
I mean, it's just great, isn't it? I love stuff like this where it's just, it's like, this is a wild thing. Probably wouldn't gig with it unless it's on a switcher, you know, but the idea of having something like this in, you know, in a switching environment is also great, isn't it?
Yeah. I need to go back in and check out some of those pedals.
Some of their stuff looks really, really good.
Interesting secondhand stuff, don't they?
Yeah. That's really what I'm into most, is the wild things that you see when no one knew to just do 28 variations of a Strat, there weren't like 100 companies whose sole business was to make a slight variation on a Strat, you know. And
it's an interesting shop. I need to go back in there to try out the pedals, just because when I was in there before, I foolishly went in with my partner Emma, who is the worst person to go guitar shopping with, because whatever you pick up, she'll encourage you to purchase it, and it makes it very difficult to make, you know, clear decisions. So as soon as she was trying to sell it to me more than the fella at the shop, the guitar. So I had to just be like, right, we just need to leave and I'll come back later and do it.
She was like, look, you know, this gives you dopamine and makes you happy. So just like, if you buy this thing, it means I have to work less for a bit.
Exactly. Well, anyway, speaking of purchasing things, JD, you've bought a bunch of weird stuff this week.
It's not that weird. So I continued my path to unexpected Kramer aluminium necked basses. And then I found a really good version of the Duke, which is the Kramer Duke. It's the Duke Deluxe that I have. And so basically that's the sort of Steinberger shape, the headless sort of rectangle bodied, you know, small bodied. It's a short scale as well. So it's a 30 inch short scale, uses regular strings. So it basically has Schaller guitar tuners, down by the body. Instead of,
the modern day bridge tuners. It's just normal tuning pegs put in a different place. And they're like guitar tuning pegs.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, they work really well, but it's still just a bit, you know, it's basically the ball ends down at the top. But the wild thing about this, so again, about everything I always talk about is what I'm into right now is the weird stuff that people did when we didn't know what was the accepted way of doing things. So to make this a short scale, the story goes, what Kramer did was just literally chop off the tuning fork top of their regular aluminium neck. So it's just the same aluminium neck they have otherwise, but like with a different fretboard, but it's like they didn't recast. I think that they just literally chopped off the tuning fork. And, I've seen a few of these come and go over the years, and it's the thing is, it's got basically like a Music Man style, like double J pickup in the bridge, which, you know, runs series parallel or like phase invert sort of thing, and it's surprisingly usable because I got it thinking it was going to be sort of a toy in essence, also the one I have is a color I've never seen on these, and it's sort of a translucent blue.
I've only ever seen these in black.
Yeah, black. I've seen white ones, but those are rare. But this is like a custom color. There's some wild variations because they made a bunch of these. They're wildly circulated now because it's no one's main base. and it's, you know, I will say it's much better playing. And it sounds huge.
Right.
Like, it might be the biggest sounding bass I have at the moment. It's just, it sounds really good. It's really high output. It's got a Schaller Double J pickup in it. And yeah, it's just, I'm just really into it. Like I'm finding it really fun to play, and it's one that I sort of keep like downstairs, because the difficult thing is it doesn't have a headstock, so it doesn't hang, and and it's slightly irregular shaped, so it's not a perfect rectangle because lawsuits, but it, so it's a little trapezoidal like at the end, and which means that it doesn't stand up, you know, like you get with the Stata spaces where they have the double like
things. And of course with a Steinberger, the tuners, which are the circular proper bridge tuners on a Steinberger, they're recessed into the body so that it can just sit standing up. The other thing that Steinberger has, which I always loved, was the little metal pin, almost
lever.
Lever that came out on the underside so that you could rest it on your leg and play. I just thought that was that was them actually thinking about it. I mean, I always thought it was ridiculous. It was like, you know, you could have done is just made this a normal shape, and then you wouldn't have to invest in this entirely extra thing. But it doesn't matter. I still love Steinbergers. They are very cool. Did this one do the little clip?
It doesn't have a clip or anything. So like this, and I think this must have been an early version of one of the deluxes, or just so from reading, you know, some research about them, there's wild variances, you know, and then there used to be, you know, you used to be able to sort of go, oh, well, a deluxe has the switch that the regular, the standard doesn't have. And you're like, except on some of these. And it really just feels like they wired up a bunch of bodies randomly, or like someone was just picking up a body and wiring it and be like, oh, this is meant to be deluxe. Oh, well, you know, like, and it seems that, so there's no real consistency. You know, online, there's a lot of, they're real Marmite-y. I mean, you're going to get that with, you know, any headless bass at any time thing, and also translucent blue, but tonally, people really, really like them or really dislike them. I was sort of prepared for it to just kind of be a bit of a toy, short scale.
It's a proper aluminium neck bass as well. Yeah. So it was a cool, fun thing to buy. I assume the finish meant that you got a good price.
It was very good. Also because I had seen them at when I did my little excursion to Denmark Street, which I post about on the Facebook group. Much less than I had seen a black version in the shop.
Wow.
Yeah, like considerably less than that. I was like, I almost feel a bit bad, but also it is translucent blue. So, and it's one of those things where I imagine if you're trying to get rid, it's just there, you know, and you're like, please someone buy this. It's probably been on the market for 6 years or, you know, enough. But yeah, I was really, really surprised by it. It has a couple little things. There's a couple electrical faults and all that, but it's, you know, it's a couple dips of a soldering iron really. And I'm going to replace all the pots. We'll talk about this on Patreon. I'm going to replace all the pots on my on my other Kramers at the moment, pretty shortly. So I was like, well, what's two more? You know. So, yeah.
When you say it's translucent blue, what sort of blue?
It is. I'd say like a darker sort of rich blue, like nowhere near navy, but sort of like a pretty, but it's not like electric blue. It's not like full.
Right.
It is. I'm trying to think about like the, it's the blue you would see on bases, especially in like early 90s. It feels like they're probably a precursor to that color blue. Like you, for me, I think about this, a friend of mine's older brother had this translucent blue Samick bass with gold hardware, because of course. But
there were so many of those Samicks, blue and gold hardware. It's just a weird combo.
But it's sort of that color, that electric-y kind of 80s color. I'm trying to see if there's something close to it that I have. Maybe a bit of the blue that you get on like a CS2
or something like that. So I mean, it's like a primary
color blue,
yeah,
sort of thing.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Good primary color blue is a good.
Nothing
good
tasteful like a Pelham or a Daphne.
Oh no. Yeah, I mean, part of me thinks like, wouldn't it be great to do like a Pelham blue on this, and then figure out some way to do a pointless like white scratch plate or something. just like try to make it like a vintagey style. I got it with a hard case, because you have to, because it's a custom size. But it basically, if I carry it around, I feel like I'm going to the snooker or something, you know, like I'm just going to like, you know, the local men's club to go play snooker. it's kind of what the case looks like. So
right.
Yeah. So I'm really, really into it, and hoping that's, I was like, this is it. And then immediately was like, oh yeah, there's these two other Kramers I want though. So,
this whole discussion has made me really want a Steinberger again. Did you ever own a Steinberger?
I do love all the NS stuff. Like certainly like, yeah, like the wave. Like, I think those are really great basses and stuff. And, you know, like, I mean, all their actual stringed instruments I love. But the Radius bass that they came out with a few years ago is one of the best playing, best sounding basses I've had. I mean, that's I'd love to find one of those. Also, they're lovely, lovely people. Right. And it's just, I can't say enough nice things about them, because they, you know, again, like you were saying about the little lever on the Steinberger, like Ned Steinberger is an absolute genius, not a guitarist, bass player, musician, you know, and so he just comes up with like, just thinks in completely different ways than the rest of us who are like, well, it's not really a Tele style, is it? You know? And yeah, I love those. I've never owned a proper Steinberger. I've owned like the Spirit versions, right, like the X5 or whatever.
The Spirit versions are great. I mean, you're not getting through neck construction with any of those. They're going to be just a bolt-on sort of maple and cheap rosewood neck. But they were very good for what they were. They came in there like a really well padded soft bag. You could get them in black or white, or I know now they also do them in like a graffiti yellow and a hot rod red as well, which is pretty cool. We used to get those Spirits in at GAC a lot, and we just used to have tons of them. I assume the deal we had with the distributor meant we had to buy 50 at a time or whatever.
Yeah.
It's always this massive stack of Steinbergers that were bought very occasionally. But I used to get them out and play them, and they were always really good, you know, for the money. For the money, it's a funny phrase, isn't it? But yeah. But they were $399.
Good value.
Yeah. They were $399, and up against anything else at $399, it was a better bass. It was just such a specific look.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, and I think now people are much more used to different looks. Sure. Then certainly, you know, certainly then, like one of the big draws was that they looked different than, you know, the four guitars we were used to seeing. Whereas now, you know, there's so many weird ergonomic focused body shapes, you know, guitars that definitely gent, those sorts of things. But it's just, but now you sort of look at me like, oh, what a boring, it's just a box, you know, it just looks weird. But like, yeah, some of the, I was looking at these recently, like some of the GT Pros now, which I think is their sort of, not naming them Spirits, but they're still Steinberger, like GT Pros. You can get, like Thomann has them for like mid four and stuff like that, where you get multi pickup whammy bar, but still, you know, it's basically everything you would look to. One of my two like dream basses that I would love to have, that I would love for someone to just give me, because I'm not sure I would properly feel good about affording it myself. It would be like the Steinberger XL2, like the classic 80s, like the composite body, all of that stuff. Cause I think it just, they sound so good. I have played a couple of them.
It was that time period where people were trying to make basses sound like the low end of a piano. Like that was the goal.
Yeah. And oddly enough, both of the guys because they're both dudes, whose basses I played were both reggae. Both in reggae bands, and it was, but again, it was because they were so big, you know, and they were sort of the sound of those basses is so big, and again, like sound and was so clear that by the time they added all the extra super low end stuff from, you know, from DBX and some of the other processors they used at the time, it was just, you know, you could, there were still notes there, but it was this, it really kicked you in the chest, like with each thing. And these sound really good. And I quite like to have one, but yeah. I think they're about $4,000 now, or if not more. And I mean, to be fair, they've never been super cheap, which I know we sort of, we've talked about this, and I know you sort of talked about it last episode, but it's like, it's that kind of stuff for the things that I know that's a reasonable price to pay for it now, but I also know that 2 years ago, I could have paid mid twos.
Yeah.
And for some reason, in the last 2 years, it's now over four, and I will just forever know that. And I feel like that changes the value for me. So.
Yeah. Yes, that is the problem. Yeah, I really like the idea of getting an NS design, one of the WAV4s, their radius bass. Mm. They are extremely good. And I feel like that bass is all the best bits of the original Steinbergers, but then going, but we're going to make it not quite so very 80s.
Yeah.
You know, it's got... Go on.
Yeah, go ahead. I was like, it's still a strong look.
Yeah.
You know, like it's
still, it's headless, dear listener. It's still bridge, you know, bass tuners, big soap bar pickup in the middle. Very, you know, same as the old Steinbergers, but it's a more standardized Strat-esque body.
Yeah. To me, it sort of feels like the, the Satriani Strat from Ibanez, like that sort of rounded, you know, just sort of, you know.
Yeah, it's a bit ergo. Gear. Yeah.
I'll say I played those basses years, when I first played it was years ago at Bass Player Live in Hollywood, and just sat down and was actually blown away by the pickups in them.
It's an EMG, isn't it? But it's an EMG that's been specifically designed for NS.
Yeah, because they do a lot of those in their uprights, like the more expensive uprights will have the EMG, like piezos and stuff like that. And they just sound so good and so articulate.
Right.
And yeah, it's just... They sound like nothing else I've really heard, you know, like it's the same way, like certain things just have their own sound without really imparting it onto everything else you do, where it's like, oh, I can't make this work with anything else. Like the only thing that will do this is this. And I don't quite understand what it is, but it is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. Yeah, they're very cool, and they actually go secondhand. You can get some of the basic ones for only like £500. Those Radius basses. So.
Yeah, I think for me, because they have a few different level, like tiers,
of course,
of them. I think it's three. I think for me, I can't remember what it's called, but I'd probably just Google quickly. I think I'd probably go mid tier, just because it is like. The pickups are a real...
The problem, I think, with the NS designs is what you're getting is construction, you know, the pickups. It's attention to detail. And if you go for the lower tier, you're actually getting a lot of the standardized stuff that, you know, that's no different from a lot of the competition. If you want an NS design, what you need to go for is the upper echelons of their models to get what NS design represent, which is extreme quality.
Well, and I think that's the thing, like we were talking about with the GTs and the Spirits, and it's like, well, those are good and those give you the vibe, but if you want the thing that is what sets it so apart from other stuff, it is the top end. But I mean, even then, their top ends. Oh, the page just loaded, and I forgot how much I love these. I really like it. Oh no, I thought I was done. Well, here we go. Second job it is. But yeah, like, oh, they're just so good. But yeah, like it's the CR series and stuff for those. It's just everything is so good. Such amazing basses. Also, I mean, I love everything they do. Like the upright that I have, like the WAV upright, and then like the NXT-A, which is their newer version. Although, so it was like a bit of a step up and things like that. It's just such, they're so good. They do what they do. You know? Like, it's like in no way are they trying to do anything else. And it's, you know, I as far as electric uprights and stuff go, they're to me are actually peerless. I think there are other places that make decent stuff, but like, I haven't found anything that comes close. Honestly, yeah,
they are extremely good. Now, with your coming back to your little Kramer short scale, it was quite fortuitous timing because we were speaking to Neil from New Tone Strings this week, and we haven't got these yet, dear listener, but New Tone Strings have just released a new type of string called shorties. They're short scale strings. Obviously, they've always done short scale strings, but these shorties are specifically designed to deal with the flubbiness that you get on, especially on a low E and an A string on a short scale. You get a lack of sustain, and whilst your fundamentals on a short scale are always really there, they can feel a bit loose and floppy and, a little bit sustainless. Fine if you want a vintage tone, but if you want anything else, if you want a general purpose bass, generally speaking, this is what makes short scale basses difficult. And so New Tone Strings have designed these strings to be especially using sort of a special type of core that counteracts that, strings that will be especially zingy and vibrant on the low E and A especially. So we're going to get some sets, and it's perfect for the Kramer because that's exactly what you want from that instrument.
Yeah, I'm not going for like a Hofner violin bass sort of sound, you know? Like I just want it to be, I mean, ideally, I want it to be like 80s slap sound, or I want it like everything. I want it to sound like Mick Karn from Japan, or I want it to sound like the bass in Too Shy by Kajagoogoo or something like that. Like that's really wanted to do without all the chorus. So, you know, so as long as that works. But yeah, I'm really into the idea of those strings. And I didn't know they were. I mean, obviously it's new, but I didn't know they were doing that. And that feels like the exact thing that I want, certainly for the ENA, because you're right, like it is floppy, and like on the Broncos that I have, we've pumped this before too, but I've gone with a really heavy gauge on the A and the E just to try to make them have some tension. So.
This is exactly why when I had my Fidelity Stellarosa bass made, I ended up going back to Fidelity to have them cut me a 34-inch scale neck. I had a 30-inch scale neck originally, and it just on the low end, you know, which is what shorties do. So, which is fine. It's just it's not what I specifically wanted.
Yeah, and I think like for me, like there's a few. Like for the short scale stuff, like when I'm doing like ADG strings or, you know, even like parts that are sort of like if something's in D and it's, you know, the lowest note I have is like fifth fret A string, then I feel like I could use it for recording quite easily, but it would only be where I could stop when I goes to the next part that goes down an octave or whatever. Right. And then be like, okay. So yeah, so I'm really interested to see how those work out, and it's, you know, I'm always in the market for new strings. I sort of feel a bit homeless in strings because, you know, like we saw before, but like I'd use DR strings for 20 plus years probably, like exclusively, and just been looking for some new stuff. So I'm into like all the different variations. One, it's changed like since I live here now, like there's just different availability of strings And so I'm just really into, I'm into new stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of strings, you and I both purchased a set of String Joy strings when we were at the Brighton Guitar Show a few weeks ago. And we've got a couple of demos for you this week, dear listener. One of them, because a few weeks ago I also picked up a Fender Roger Waters P bass. Wonderful, wonderful bass, like big 50s thick profile maple neck. Brass nut and a Seymour Duncan quarter pounder. It's perfect for big, aggressive, exactly what I want, a big rock and roll sound. Now, Roger Waters strings up with flats, and a quarter pounder is a great pickup, again, for getting the most out of flats because it will give you a bit of a push, a bit of an edge, while still retaining the lovely subtlety that you get with a set of flat wounds. I've strung this up with a heavy gauge set, a 55 to 110 set of the String Joy strings. I'm doing a little sort of rocky punk track, just a plectrum line. And I just wanted to hear, obviously, this is more than the strings. This is also the bass being fantastic, that brass nut, the quarter pounder pickups, but all those things together make just a perfect, clangy, wonderful punk rock bass tone that just fills out everything. Let's give it a listen and then we'll talk about it and see what you think, dear listener. But I just thought this was such an ultimate rock and roll bass tone and so simple to create. Here it is. There you go. Dead simple. Mm-hmm. All done. We were talking about this like just before, JD. All done with the Plugin Alliance. Yes,
yeah,
Plugin Alliance yeah. Ampeg B15 amp sim. And then just the – I always use it. I love it as a compressor. It's just the Fat Channel, which is a free compressor that comes with Studio One. You get it on the most basic – the free version that you can download now. The Fat Channel just on their tube. Val, it's like a one knob compressor. It's just gain and it does everything gorgeously. Obviously, it's not going to give you, it doesn't do proper, very nice, even sounding compression, but it's lovely coupled with an Ampeg B15 to just bring out all of that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really, I mean, those two things really great sound. I really liked like that bass tone sounded huge.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah, very, very usable, very aggressive, very big. I mean, I love a quarter pound P bass, especially those. That was the first mod pickup I ever bought was a quarter pound P bass. You know,
when it said bass lines in the corner of the pickup.
Maybe
they changed it to say Seymour Duncan. But originally it said bass lines.
Bass lines. Yeah, because for some reason I thought those that was like the it was like a separate version. But yeah. Yeah, I mean, because it would have been, it was because I put it in my PV Fury.
Oh, wow.
PV Fury.
Good with bass.
Which, you know, of course, now it's probably would go for well more than I've, it's probably in bits in like in a shed at my parents somewhere. It was a great bass, but I've always loved quarter pounds because it was, but yeah, you can just, that bass sounds massive.
Yeah.
And those tones sound good. I've been really enjoying, because I put the String Joy strings on my Kramer, the DMZ, DiMarzio, sort of just P bass one. And, you know, very, very lively, without being like, without being too sharp and clangy.
Right.
I think it's like there's some new strings that you're just like, okay, I can't wait for that to go away.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you're like, I need to play this as much as possible before I have a gig because these strings are way too zingy.
Yeah. And they're sort of all those. So the thing I found is that all the strings are very balanced, which is one of my big things to make sure that they all feel like they're in the same family. And then, I found them to be, which I like, more taut, or they feel tighter than I would say like of a similar gauge from certainly some other some other brands out there. So I, you know, thus far, I'm really, really digging them, really into the idea. Plus, you know, I like the idea. It's, you know, Swell brand. I like, you know, I sort of grew up nearish to Nashville. So Nashville is like a second home for me gig wise for a big portion. So, you know, there's always a bit of like, yeah, yeah, it's good.
It's the sort of area that I trust for anything rock and roll-y.
Just
like you trust Portland to have good effects pedal companies. I trust Nashville for anything rock and roll-y.
Yeah. I mean, Nashville's where I bought all my first real proper amps and stuff. Like my first Eden rig was it Rock Block in Nashville. Oh. Yeah. It's good times.
I have never been. Because I've never been to Summon Am.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, I mean, to be fair, I'd quite like to go outside of Summon Am. But yeah, who knows? Maybe one of these days we'll be in Nashville.
Okay. Yes, we will see. We'll see. Now, the second demo I want to play is, and I'll talk about this because we're coming to the end of the podcast, so we'll talk about this now, but I'm going to have to follow up with this next week as well, dear listener, because it's great. Vintage guitars. Obviously, we had the vintage Joe Doe Gas Jockey on the last couple of weeks of the podcast. Vintage have sent me one of their new, it's part of their reissued series, and it's their V51. Now, they do a number of series, but they're two sort of retro series, like old Fendery and old Gibsony series, are the reissued series and the Icon series. Icon series are relicked, and I assume are the inspiration for them now doing their Pro Shop. Don't forget, that is coming soon, dear listener, the Pro Shop Guitar Nerds build. And the reissued series is exactly that. They're just vintage inspired by the guitars and basses of old. And the V51 is, as you'd expect, it is them doing a 51 P bass. Now, it isn't actually 51, it's 56, because the body's contoured in the same way as a modern precision bass is, but it has that single coil pickup. So that's 54, actually, not 56. Sorry, 54 is the introduction of contours. But it still has a great big, thick C neck in a vintage tint or maple. It's available in Butterscotch or Sunburst. And it has that. It has a Wilkinson bridge with four saddles, which is great. It still has the vintage look, but it's actually usable. And it has the Wilkinson single coil precision bass pickup on there. Now, I've recorded a demo of me playing this bass. This bass definitely demands flat wound. There's just no reason for you to have this type of instrument and not have flats. But I thought it sounded fantastic, even with the rounds. There is something clangier about the single coil than the modern-day humbucker, something not as tight, that definitely isn't suitable for some things, but for some really rugged blues and rock and roll, it can sound excellent. So I've got a little blues track here, and just listen to it. Exactly the same setup, in fact. Same amp settings as I went for the Roger Waters, same compressor. I just think it sounded great. Here it is. There it was, the vintage V51. Just all clang. It's just all old school clang. But yes, I'm a big fan. And, you know, it's like sub £500 for one of those as well.
Yeah, those basses are very good. I really enjoyed that as well. And I caught myself thinking, it's like, oh, just those old B15s just sound the best recorded, don't they? Like, and just like even the plug-in versions, like everything just sounds so is so big and growly and sits so well.
That plug-in, dear listener, I can't remember. I think I got it in a sale for like 30 quid or something like that. I think it's normally 100, but definitely like pop it, like find it, Plug-in Alliance, pop it in a watch list or something and keep an eye on it. For even if you're a guitarist, you want to lay down bass on a track every now and again, there is nothing better than this for just going straight into your standard interface with any bass.
It also works pretty well as a guitar amp. So I've used that on like flavor guitar bits. Like if you're layering guitar, just because it's, you know, it's a really good sounding. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a really good sounding tube, you know, like 15 inch, you know, like it's just a valve head that it's clean and vintagey sounding. You don't have to drive it. You can drive it, you know, and it's got a couple different switches. So you get a couple different flavors of B15 on it as well. So
That is very good, actually. It splits between something like a 63 and a 66, something like that. Yeah. And the 66 is slightly hotter. I find I have to change virtually no settings. I use one of their presets, which is called Rock No Horn.
Turn the horn off.
Yeah, of course. Who has a horn on? And then I'd use the standard one for normal clean and then switch to the 66 for drive. And that's the only change I make to it, and it just always sounds very good.
Yeah, I can't remember. I have a Belta Lauda preset, so like I have like all my standard stuff. It's like here's my starts for everything, and it's like, yep, that's fine. I do a couple tweaks based on whatever. I mean, to be fair, I only really use that a couple times. I know we're coming to the end, but we'll say what I would do with that plugin is I oftentimes run a parallel signal path, or I'll split it so that I have a totally clean signal or just clean bottom end and then a distorted top end. So I'll put like a, you know, crossover at some stage and just run everything high through the B15. And I find like that, because that keeps the low end really, really tight and stuff. And then just gives you a bit of grit up top.
Yeah, it is. What a great little solution for basically anything.
Yeah, and it's one I have loads of different ones, and I come back to that more than most for all my different flavors. So,
I am unsurprised. It is excellent. Do check it out, dear listener. Now, JD is absolutely right. We are right at the end of this week's podcast. So me and JD are going to head over to the Patreon now, where we're going to record a whole extra episode. We're going to talk a lot about accessories, but I really want to ask you about your fuzz pedal,
the BAE
as well. Yeah. So we're going to talk about that as well on the Patreon. You can join us there, dear listener. Just head over to patreon.com/guitar nerds. All the information on how to join our little community is there. Don't forget to join the Facebook group, Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. Get involved in all the weekly discussion. It's where we normally get questions for the group. Didn't see any I liked this week, which is why me and JD are going to talk about accessories. And if you want to get in touch, DM us on any of those things or info@guitarnerds.net. Thank you very much for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Very much everyone for listening to this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. Thank you to our top tier Patreon backers for your constant support and making it possible for us to continue doing this podcast. Thank you to Rocket Rob Patterson, Marcus Deluxe, Dorsonic Pickups, Rob Witherden, Chris Franklin, Anton Friant, Russ Meehan, Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, Daniel Walker, Jorin Brown, John Conaway, Russell Healing, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Einzer, Mark Hizal Kadawaki, Stuart Robson, Eric File, Peter Peche, Andy Manley, Joe Puttick, Blake Weiland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Dorr, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Losif, Stephen Burke, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Rob Nordvik, Scott O'Brien, and of course, the wonderful Moog Gravett.